Hello and welcome to this supplementary episode of the Press Start Podcast, Press Start Australia's weekly video game discussion podcast. I'm your host for the third time in a row, a bit of a trifecta if you don't mind, Brody, joined today by my fellow gamers and co-hosts, James.
Hello.
And Harry.
Hello.
Now, we're gathered here today not for a regular Press Start podcast. Here, we're talking all about Death Stranding on the beach, Death Stranding 2 on the beach, if you will, which James just got to go hands-on with throughout a near week-long trip to Kojima Productions. We're going to chat all things DS2 from its story and its pacing to how they've iterated on gameplay this time around. We'll also address a few of the good questions, I guess, we got in sent in on social media. There were some good ones, there were some bad ones, but we'll deal with them all in between. But first, James, you are uncharacteristically tight-lipped last week when we tried to pry a bit of information from you about the game. Now we're at liberty to discuss most of what you experienced. Take us through the format of the experience before we dive into the game itself. Like, how did the week unfold?
So we essentially just played the game, like, from beginning, I want to say from beginning to end, but they wouldn't let us go too far. So we had, like, a good, like, 4 days... I think 4 days of hands-on with the game, peppered with some interviews with some of the dev team and stuff. So I think my play time, because I played through a few, I obviously ate, but I tried to like hydrate and take care of myself, but I also wanted to see as much as I could. So I think like playing through a lot of my lunch breaks, I end up on 35 to 40 hours roughly, which is quite a big chunk. So, and that's huge. Probably, I think, yeah, like the first, I've got a notebook somewhere that I didn't bring with me, which is probably stupid of me, but about 5 to 6 episodes of the final game.
Lovely.
You could literally do everything. It felt like the final game. It wasn't like a, you know, a selection of demos or anything. It was literally just like title screen, intro.
Go for it.
Go do whatever you want.
Okay, well, without diving into any particular facet of the game too deeply, because I'm sure we'll roll on and get to things as we go, can you give us a broad overview of what your impressions have been coming away from 40-odd hours with the game?
Impressions are good, which is nice, because I was a bit worried. I was like, what if I sit down and play it, and I hate it, and it's like day one? So I do think, yeah, it's definitely a step above like the first Death Stranding. I think overall it is just a much more honed experience compared to the first game. It doesn't have to like get bogged down in like, you know, developing that world and talking about like what BTs are, or what beaches are. Like, we all know that. I mean, some people probably, it's the type of game as well where you can probably play it and you still don't know that. But I feel like it does it pretty. It's all set right, so they can kind of just delve into like what Sam and Lua are up to. And I think because of that, the pacing is much better, like much better than the original game in many ways. It definitely feels like they've achieved what they really wanted to achieve with maybe even the first game. Like, it just feels like a step above in like pretty much every way, to the point where like I went back to the first game when I got back, and it, even though it's not like markedly different, I think just the flow of it and just the feel of it all is a lot better. So,
right,
yeah, like I think overall, just like it's not going to be, and I could kind of see the conversations already starting to form where a lot of people are like, it's just like MGS now, but like I don't think it's like that at all. I think it is definitely still a Death Stranding game at its core. A lot of elements that wouldn't be out of place in a Metal Gear game. But I still think it does feel like Death Stranding, like, from the get-go. So,
now, I thought my, you know, my wanted format for this was going to fall away very quickly, and I think it's going to. Why don't you speak to some of the ways you think people will draw comparisons, I guess, to Metal Gear? Like, what things have they added, whether it's gameplay elements or just general pacing-wise, that sort of makes it feel more like a Metal Gear game?
Yeah, I think speaking to the devs, you definitely got the vibe that Kojima wanted a lot more combat, and I do think he did mention in the group interview that we had that there was more of a want from players for him to kind of return to Metal Gear Solid, and I guess even though that is going to be supposedly happening with like Fizzint later on, I think that it does feel like a response to that in a way, because combat is a lot more viable now. Stealth is a lot more viable too. Like, I feel like in the original game, you kind of crossed a border and like ran into the what were the bad guys called? I can't remember, like the...
Mules.
Yes, mules, yeah. Mm. So they're like called bandits now. In the original game, you kind of stepped past one of their perimeters and they would get alerted to you straight away, right? In some way. In this, it feels a lot more natural. Like, you can kind of sneak into a base, you can sneak around. But if you really just want to, like, I don't want to say kill everything, but, like, knock everyone out with either weapons or just with your strand, like, you can do that as well. It just feels a lot more viable. So, yeah, I think that kind of open world slash stealth slash action game hybrid is why I think a lot of people will compare it to MGS. But I genuinely think this is just so Death Stranding at its core in terms of, like, the main premise is still delivering stuff, still connecting the different settlements to the chiral network and such, so...
Yeah, okay. Well, we'll get back to somewhat on track in what I was trying to do here. A particularly interesting talking point for us, at least, being where we are currently located. Hint, it's Australia. It comes from the fact that Kojima seemingly has opted for Australia as the main setting for this sequel. Can you tell us, if you're able to, like, I'm not sure what you are and aren't allowed to talk about, but how do we get to this point? Like, how do we find ourselves in the land of Oz?
Yeah, I'll keep it... I think we could talk about, like, how you get there. I'm going to keep it, like, spoiler-free just in case, obviously, I think people want to probably experience that for themselves. Will say the game does start off in a smaller area, and then you eventually head to Australia, because, obviously, the game is set... The first game is set in the United Cities of America, right? And you connect all of them and blah, blah, blah. So they kind of need to... Sam needs to go and connect... more places to the chiral network. So eventually you do end up in Australia for some reason. The reason why you go there, like, is not, like, kind of fully explained. I think the developers did say, like, they just wanted to create, like, a different area that wasn't Europe, because they'd already kind of used some of, like, I guess I think it was Iceland was already used to, like, for America. Yeah. So they just wanted to go for, like, a different area that looked very different to what they already had, basically. So they landed on Australia, and obviously Kojima loves George Miller and Mad Max. So there was a connection there. The way you get to Australia is pretty conceited, but I think it's fine. And he even admitted that in an interview. He was like, yeah, like, I just needed some way to get everyone there, so that just worked.
Tidal wave washes now, them there.
And he was like, and now I can make unlimited sequels if I want to. I can go anywhere. And I was like, oh, yeah, cool. We'll go with that. Mars. To be honest, I didn't think about it much. Like, I was, besides, I, it wasn't, it didn't feel out of place. Like, I was like, oh, yeah, cool, that makes sense. Cool, let's go there. And we do, so... I think, like, in terms of Australia, it's not accurate in the same way. Like, I'm trying to think if there's any other, like, accurate depictions of Australia in games, but I don't think there is. Like, I think the closest is maybe Forza Horizon, right? But even
probably.
That's,
yeah,
like, quite different. It's definitely it's very much like Northern Territory kind of Australia.
Yeah, it's like outback leaning.
Yeah, very, like, outback, very, like, red desert. But obviously with, like, a Death Stranding, like, post-apocalyptic flourish to it, right? Like, there's, in WA, there's a giant polar-capped mountain, which obviously isn't there in real life, but who knows what's happened in this world since the big crash. But yeah, so and it's not like you're going to walk around and see the Opera House. Like, it's not like that kind of Australia. It's just like this real, they called it in the interviews a primordial Australia, and I could totally understand what they mean by that. Like, it does feel like... very, like, old world Australia, so.
Right. Having played, I guess, the only other game I can think of that I've played set in Australia, Mad Max by Avalanche, is this as ochre and bogan as that sort of came out?
No. I don't think so. And that was the other thing that kind of took me aback with this, is all of the dialogue and all of the way that the Australian people speak to you is very... There is some ochreishness, like, whatever, however we want to say it.
Ochreiness.
That's another game. There is, like, an element of that, obviously, but it just feels like normal. I don't know how, like, to describe. It doesn't feel like the stereotype.
It doesn't feel out of place. Like,
Yeah, like, I didn't really, to the point where, like, I kind of didn't think about it until someone mentioned it to me, like, in the group who was an Australian. like, what are the accents like and stuff? And I was like, oh, yeah, like, they were Australian. Like, I didn't really think about it that much.
Yeah.
And I say in my preview as well, you know, they say words like Buckley's and they say, like, you know, bloody in front of everything. And, like, the localization is very good. So I think they do a really good job of kind of depicting it. I think it's a much better job than they did for depicting America in the first game. So it's I think maybe they're... intentions kind of shifted for this game. They wanted to be a little bit more accurate for the area. And I think they did a really good job. So, yeah.
Do we get any iconic Australian cameos, i.e. Toadfish Rebecca?
Of Neighbours fame. So, the one thing we can't talk about is the people who are playing any of the preppers and stuff. Yeah. I mean, even if Toadfish was in it, I cannot confirm or deny, but I mean, you can probably understand.
He's totally in it.
I wouldn't expect him to be in it, but yeah, who knows? Maybe Holly Valance will turn up. All the big guns, right?
Yeah.
But obviously, in terms of what has been revealed, George Miller is the face of Tarman, and he's voiced by Marty Roan, who's actually an Australian pop singer who had his big day in the 70s. Like, he sounds and is Australian in a way. And Tarman does play a pretty big part in the game. So, yeah, like, there are...
It's weird they wouldn't just get George Miller to voice himself, being that he is Australian.
I think it's the same deal with, like, Nicholas Winding Refn
and stuff like that.
Yeah, and Hartman. Like, I think maybe they just were either too expensive or, like, not available, or maybe they're not voice actors, right? But then I guess, true. I don't know. I would love to know the process behind that. But Marty Roan's voice, I can't say I've heard George Miller speak a lot, but it doesn't sound wrong. Like, it's coming out of George Miller, and I believe that could be George Miller's voice, if that makes sense.
Sure. So, now, you mentioned, obviously, earlier, and you mentioned in the preview that UCA's Icelandic-leaning terrain didn't really pull Americana to the front of your mind, but you said that this Australia feels right. Like, in what ways does it feel right? Obviously, you mentioned ways where it doesn't, like the polar mountain, but obviously, being that this is a primordial Australian, I guess it's a little bit different.
There's definitely bits where it's, like, what's the word? It just feels like Death Stranding 1, right? Like, it's just this world that's ended. But towards the end of our time with the game, there were definitely a lot of points where I would just kind of stop and be like, oh, like, wow, this actually looks like the Outback in a lot of ways. Like, between the trees and just the rocks and just the way that it's formed, like, it looks very accurate to the place. But even this world is a lot more alive than the first game. Which I talk about a lot in my previous, the thing I noticed the most. And in saying that, there are a lot of animals, like you like birds, bats, whatever. But like a lot of echidnas you'll see come across, bilbies, like you're driving like down one of the roads that someone's created and a bilby might hop across it. And that's kind of like bizarre to see.
Were there animals in the first Death Stranding? I can't remember.
I don't think there was any.
Live ones.
No, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there was dead whales, but that's true. That's about it. So,
did you notice that the level design or world design shifted with the topography of it being Australia? Like, in terms of delivery obstacles and stuff? And
honestly, like nothing major in turn. They were pretty upfront about how they designed the map. You know, they would kind of get the big landmarks that they were kind of like, they said that they were moved by. I don't really know. Like, right. I don't know if that was a translation or something, but they got the stuff that they spotted the most and kind of built a map around that and then kind of added in obstacles to kind of make it, you know, Death Stranding-like, because you don't want to be able to go straight for your objective because that would be boring. I don't think that there's not a lot of... It doesn't change dramatically. Like, it is still, you know, very mountainy, very hilly. A lot of valleys, blah, blah, blah. So I think that's kind of it. I think that's the important thing with this game, is that it does have a big variety of, I guess, what's the word? Yeah, topography, so that you can kind of create your own paths and stuff.
Yeah.
You mentioned in the preview as well that, like, there were some of these set pieces, like, almost like quakes that sort of, like, saw, like, big mountains sort of crumbling and stuff like that, which I feel could obviously... serve to constantly mix up, I guess, the terrain and people's buildings and stuff that they can just crumble away at any minute. Did you get the sense that these were very much set pieces that only happen at certain points, or they could happen at any time?
Yeah, there's definitely points. So there's points where, I'm just trying to think now, but there are points where it happens. It definitely is just going to happen for everyone. The intro is one of them. But there were definitely times later on where things would happen kind of haphazardly. And the way that it works with all of the weather and the natural disasters and stuff, they happen, so you can actually, they're all kind of planned out in terms of, you can unlock upgrades that let you see the weather. So, like, if you really want to get sweaty and, like, plan and make sure that things are going to be okay, you can pull up the weather, and it's, and they even say the weather is kind of accurate, but it might not be. I didn't really have the time to sit there and work out how accurate it was, but so you can do that, you can kind of plan around it. But to answer your question, yeah, it doesn't feel gamey in that, say, there's always a flood. It just might be, if it's been raining for ages, like, there will be the river might, that you usually cross with the ladder, might all of a sudden be higher. And that ladder might be gone. Or the bridge that you've built might be completely collapsed if there's been, like, a gate. They're called gate quakes. And if there's been a gate quake and it's a severe level, because there's different levels, like G level 7 or whatever, that will destroy your structures. So it's not, like I said, doesn't happen all the time. Like, it, and I feel like if it did happen all the time, it would actually get annoying. It feels pretty well tuned. I don't know if it's maybe even looking in the background and working out if you use a ladder heaps and then being like, let's fuck him over and, like, flood that river. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if it's that smart. But it definitely feels alive, but not to the point where it's, like, artificial, if that makes sense.
Sure. Before we move to story, Harry, did you have any other questions about the world itself or the setting?
No, not particularly. I think it sounds interesting the way that they've incorporated more real-time elements and sort of shaping the land. I think the first game got to a point where you could everyone really optimize your deliveries. Just, yeah, everyone had built everything. You were using roads and stuff. So a lot of the delivery challenges didn't really hold up through the end of the game. So it's exciting to hear that, you know, things are going to be shook up.
And I think that'll still happen. Like, I think people will still definitely work out,
find ways around it.
Find ways, for sure. And there might even be flood-proof shit or something that you unlock later. I didn't get to that point. But yes, so far, yeah, it does feel a little bit more, I guess, dynamic than the first game. So,
yep. Cool. Well, moving along to the story of the game. Obviously, Death Stranding 1 left off with Sam and Lou getting their somewhat happy ending after delaying the sixth extinction event. Higgs was imprisoned, I believe, and Fragile picked back up with Fragile Express. Where do we find all these characters 11 months later?
You find them in places. Game does a pretty good job.
In Australia.
Yeah. No. I don't know how much I want to talk about this, because I do think it's really good to experience it, but you do start the game as Sam and Lou. It's 11 months after the first game. Your first objective is literally to get home. You're just, like, chilling on a mountain. I've got to go back and play the first one properly, but I'm sure they've disconnected from the UCA. Like, they've kind of gone into hiding and stuff. Fragile pops up, eventually finds them, and she gives them a new job. So in this world, like, I'll talk about, like, the overall world story wise, like, Bridges is done now, like, because all deliveries have now been automated, through AI. So they don't really need Bridges and Porters anymore. So Fragile also has closed her company, and she's opened a new one though called Drawbridge. So she eventually rocks up, gives her a reason to join Drawbridge, and go and connect somewhere else, Australia, because obviously she's not needed in the UCA. So yeah, there is a lot, there's, like, a lot that happens in the opening scenes. I would love to talk, it's basically all, you've seen it all in the trailers, but the context is very different to what you're actually shown, is probably what I will say. But he's very clever, Kojima, in the way that he's edited these trailers. But essentially, the bits that we played, you were kind of going around Australia, connecting it and recruiting people to your cause, or, like, finding people who work for Drawbridge who have kind of been lost. And that's people like Rainy and Tomorrow, the two of the new characters. So, yeah.
Well, just speaking of the new characters, obviously, you got characters like Neil, Tomorrow, like you said, Tarman, like... did you get a picture across your 40 hours how they sort of feed into the narrative? And do you get a sense that they'll be sort of fan favorite sort of characters, or do you think people will still have a soft spot more so for the originals?
Yeah. So I actually, maybe this is controversial, but I actually like all of these characters probably more than the original game. I feel like he does a really good job, like he is in Kojima, of like developing Rainey's story, Rainey's backstory especially, and Tomorrow is a character shrouded in mystery. I've seen a lot of cool scenes with her, but I still have no idea what her deal is. Like, and I think that's really cool. Like, that excites me so much. Same with Higgs. Obviously, he's back. Even Higgs is, like, so much more interesting in this one. So, and there's a character called Red Samurai who is basically this game's cyborg ninja. I'm sure they'll end up being somebody that we know. It's hard not to, like, get excited about things like that. But to go back to your question, yeah, like, I think these characters are all really cool. They do a really good job of developing their backstories and stuff. And I really hope to see how it all kind of comes together towards the end, right? Because right now it does feel like it's very much each chapter is about a person and you learn about them then, and then you kind of move on. So, and I feel like the first game was like that a lot, like with Mama and Lochna and stuff, but I definitely think there's room for these characters to all kind of come together in this story.
Right.
Without... You said that the pacing was a lot better in this as well compared to the first game. Has the narrative structure changed? Is that like part of the reason why, or is it just generally better paced?
It's still the same in that you do main orders and side orders and all that, right? But I think what changes here that is cool, depending on who you are, is that there's now a dialogue tree, right? So basically, if somebody's speaking to you and you want more information from them, you can choose to ask for that information. Right, but if you want, you can literally just be like, nah, I'm good, I get it, and just like go through, right? So I feel like that is already quite an improvement in terms of the pacing. Like, I feel like a lot of people might not want to sit there and listen to all of these proper nouns get thrown at them.
You know, exposition.
Yeah, you know how like Kojima likes to do that, right? Like, and I love that shit, but like, it's definitely not for everyone. So I think having that is quite smart. Same with the preppers. When you deliver stuff to them, you can ask for more information about like what the go is at their settlement, or you can just move on. And I think that that's really cool.
Yeah.
But in terms of what I'm saying, when I talk about the pacing as well, I just think the way that it kind of lets you breathe a bit before it starts showing you more cutscenes, like it doesn't have this like massive, you know, I just think about the first game where you have to listen to Bridget in her deathbed.
I think to your point, it spends far less time having to set up its world because you're already in it. Like, you know what you're getting into, so you can just launch
so
into
like,
what it is.
And you're still getting great story, right? Like, you get a lot of like little tidbits of Neil, because Neil is very much like Cliff in the old game. Like, there's some kind of latent memory vibe going there on there. So, there's just like a lot of threads going at once, and the game just picks up and drops them all the time. But in a way that keeps you intrigued about all of them. There's like not a single storyline of the three or four that I can think of off the top of my head that like I'm not invested in, that I want to keep playing. So,
cool.
Right on. If the first game was really about connection and linking everyone together, like what do you make of On the Beach and like what its core theme will be?
I don't want to ruin anything. And
why do we preview a Kojima game? Like, why we can't
even
talk?
Yeah, so that, because such an integral part of it is the story. But the only hint that he gave us, which I also find intriguing, and I can kind of see where he's coming from, is in the first game, the logo, the strands are falling from the letters, right?
Sure.
And now that we're all connected, the strands are coming from above. And he says to think about what that means. And as somebody who's like played the game and kind of sees some of the enemy designs and stuff, I definitely have ideas of where the story is going. But yeah, I think it's interesting that obviously this game was developed in the midst of the pandemic, and there is a lot of that, what's the word? Like, there are some, you can kind of feel that sense of, like, emotion in the game, like, in terms of, because I think people lost people went during the pandemic and such, and I feel like this is a very emotional game as a result of that. Like, I think you can feel that with Kojima. I wouldn't be surprised to hear, like, maybe he did lose somebody that he was close to during the pandemic or something, based on what's happening in this game. But I've lost the question. I've, like, lost the train of thought to what you asked. But I think the theme isn't immediately apparent, but I can definitely see where it's going. But to talk about it any further would kind of ruin it for people, and I really don't want to do that. Because I genuinely think, I don't want to say it's one of his best stories, because that's like, that sounds a bit hyperbolic, but like, I definitely feel like this is a very strong and very well-told story so far.
Yeah, so far you've really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, throughout the course of our first little segments here, you've pretty much answered all the questions I had regarding gameplay, and I guess how it iterates on old mechanics. Why don't you tell us about the new mechanics that this game brings into the fold?
I feel the same as I guess what I said before, in that I just think it introduces items to you at a better rate. You know, like, it doesn't kind of, what's the word I'm trying to look for? It doesn't kind of, like, wait, like, dick around. Like, it's kind of like, here's your thing, go do this. Like, it doesn't really waste time. The newest things that I think a lot of people will appreciate, to get back to the question, is the, obviously you can build roads, right? Now you can also build monorails. And the difference there is, it's the same kind of process as a road, but you can actually load monorails up with cargo containers. So if you need to move, like, a big amount of shit really quickly, you just load them in a container and send them to anywhere where the monorail is built. And you can actually also jump on the monorail if you want to as well, and just, like, kind of ride it. So it's like a kind of pseudo fast travel system. That's, like, probably the biggest, newest addition I think I can really talk about.
I was going to say, just on the monorail and being able to move large quantities of cargo, was that a common need? Like, were there missions that required you to move lots of cargo, or is it just when you're stacking, like, side quests and stuff like that, being able to shift everything at once?
I would say both so far. I'm very stubborn with these kinds of things. Like, I definitely could have made things easy for myself by engaging with the monorail system, but I didn't. Instead, I felt the need to build, like, three little cargo carriers and just, like, kind of walk everything over myself, which was, like, the dumbest thing. I wasted probably 2 hours of my life doing that. But I think that kind of speaks to everything that's new in this game. It's just about giving players more choice in how they do their deliveries, right? Like, I feel like I can still be, like, a stubborn dickhead who won't use, like, roads or zip lines, even though it's, like, what most people do. Or I can, like, kind of build a monorail and kind of just ride my shit that way. The game gives you large amounts of cargo to move, and obviously you've got stuff you can pick up on the way for your side missions and such. But yeah, like, there was no... I stubbornly got through the game kind of without engaging with the monorails that much. So you can still do that if you need to.
Do you get the vibe it leans more into the, like, im-sim, like, emergent gameplay that the first game had with its deliveries and the, like, sort of environmental puzzle solving, I guess?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Cool. Like, yeah, I'll pay that. Even just little things, like, you can connect two ladders now, and that's, like, a very simple change, but, like, that has a big, like, effect, right, on what you can do. Rather than build a road, I connected two ladders together twice and then made, like, a kind of shitty rail across, like, a river and kind of drove my bike over that instead. Like, if you can kind of think to do it, it will work. It might not look the best, but it'll work. So, I think so, for sure. I don't want to say it's an immersive sim in the same vein as, like, I don't know, like, Prey or...
Absolutely not, but it has, like, just elements, bits and pieces, I guess, where
I think the physics And the systems are robust enough that if you can think to do it, it will work.
Yeah, cool.
Which I guess is like a underpinning of most ImSims, so sure.
A lot of the monotony I felt from the first Death Stranding stemmed from, obviously, a lot of the... And it was by design, I think, like it was a narrative choice. Was from all, obviously, the walking and the backtracking that you obviously had to do by the end of the game. So hearing that this game has at least some means of like a fast travel sort of system with a monorail kind of warms the cockles of my heart. Are there any other means of, I guess, quicker traversal or fast travel that Kojima has put in this game that will serve players like me who are a little impatient?
Yeah, like, absolutely. And I think that is the design underpinning everything, right? Is I think everything, I don't want to say easier, but everything is definitely more aware of when it's getting annoying, if that makes sense. Like, so I feel like in the first game, there were many times where you'd go somewhere and it's like, okay, now go deliver this. And you're like, oh, for fuck's sake, like, I just did all that, right?
I just came from there.
But this game is really good at say, it might still make you do that, but it says, hey, but there's like two other things to do on the way there, so do them first. So like it kind of is a bit more considered in the way that it gives you objectives. In terms of whether there's ways to physically move across the map faster, there is still obviously lots of vehicles, zip lines, you can ride the monorail now. Speed skeletons, all of that. That was in the director's cut, especially. I think there's a lot of director's cut stuff that's carried over to this. But yeah, like it's there's a lot of options, basically. And once you've all connected and there's generators everywhere and people have built roads and shit, like it makes it even easier, right? I just think with the monorails, you've kind of they're kind of almost like roads that travel in the air, if that makes sense. Like, you can build a monorail kind of around a lot of mountains or over a lot of mountains and stuff, but you can't build a road through a mountain. So, there's more options in that way. Zip lines also, just quickly, you can now slightly curve them. So, you don't have to be, like, you know, complete parallel line. Like, you can, if you've got, like, a kind of dodgy positioning, it will work, which is cool. So, yeah.
Did you see much of the shared world building stuff in the preview?
Yes. So we were all, they set us all up. I think there was 20 or 30 of us, but we were all set up on our own server. Someone in my group was making so many roads, and I don't know who they were, but I need to, I'm formally thanking them. It was such a relief for like, because I didn't want to do any of that shit. Kojima doesn't even like doing the roads. Did you? I don't know if you guys knew that or not, but he was like, I don't understand why people want, why do people want to do this? And I was like, yeah, I agree. So I kind of
I love
like
the thought that someone got to go hands on with this game for 40 hours and they spent it making roads.
They just built roads
for everyone
just
else.
Just built roads and zip lines, but I think that's the beauty of it, right? Like you can kind of because I think
and you help
like
other people passively, like
And the likes, there's something about likes. Like me just going on my lunch and then coming back and I've got like 20 likes. Oh. I'm like, fuck, this is good.
If I've got a tweet that hits you know 8 to 10 likes, I am on clouds for the rest of the day. So I know that game.
But to get back to what else is fast, I think it's just generally better paced in terms of the objective design and such. Like, I think there's nothing in, like, you don't get a jetpack now or anything. It's not like, nothing like that dramatic. But yeah, it's it just feels good. It just feels really good. And I just didn't. For me to, like, I know I play a lot of games, and I play a lot of games for a lot of time, as we all know. But for me to, like, kind of sit there and play the same game for a whole week without doing anything else, like breaking it up with my day job or like I don't know, exercise, doing any literally anything else, and for me
for
to like
walk.
Still yeah, like for me to still find it super engaging and super fun, I think there's something there that it's yeah, it's really special in that way.
It's got the sauce.
Absolutely.
Lovely. Just before we move on from the gameplay, Harry, did you have any other penetrating insight or questions for James?
No penetrating insights.
Before we move on, I will quickly talk about the bosses because I don't think I've touched on that.
No.
And I don't think we're going to. So, they are way better in this game. I think I fought...
You said four in the preview.
Yeah, like three of them were part of the story and the fourth one I kind of accidentally stumbled upon and got destroyed by. They feel a lot better than the first game. I feel like in the first game, I don't know if you guys felt the same,
they were
but
just bullet sponges.
You just shoot at them. and they kind of just, I remember there was a whale that just like flew around for a bit. Like it was kind of like a bit whatever. In this one, you fight things and they have different attacks, and each of those attacks has like a different way to kind of stop it. And I'd say in my preview, I do feel like the way you can kind of dismember some of them does, well, not dismember, but like disable, say, their abilities by shooting at certain points feels very Horizon in that way. But also like Zelda in a way, because it's not like, it's almost like a very light, like puzzle in the way that you kind of take them down. So yeah, I just want to kind of comment on that, because I think they are a huge improvement over the first game. And even the, one of the battles is very similar to the cliff battles from the first game. And even just like the, that's a perfect example of how you play Death Stranding 2 and you see all the improvements in the combat and the gunplay and all of that, and how that kind of translates to better encounters. Because even though like this battle that I'm talking about is very similar to the first one, it is so much more enjoyable because it is visually quite spectacular, but also because it
little just tweaks and changes and
flows
stuff.
Better. Like even this is such a small thing that you can kind of do a dive. Like if you're aiming at someone and shooting at them, and you just tap a button, you can dive to the side now. And it's like a tiny thing, but it's just like a really cool way to make the combat feel more fluid.
Dynamic.
So
dynamic, fluid. Absolutely. Well, let's move on to some of the questions that people are wrote in with. Like I said, I filtered out a little bit of slop, but I think what we've got here is pretty good. So
I want to know the slot. Can we have one?
Yeah, okay. I'm sure you can plunder through the comments.
We had one guy just tell us how happy he was with the game after playing it for 60 hours, and look, good for that guy, but it wasn't a question, so it's not what I was after. Now, Elton Wilson, I didn't write what platform, so he was on something. He's just asked, is the mission structure still the same? The first game was structured as delivering cargo from one place to another. Thanks, Elton. So I'm curious if the game's structure is different, maybe in a brand new mission objective unrelated to delivery or things like that.
I will say yes. There is definitely... it's not just delivery. You might go pick something up.
Fetch quests.
Yeah. Even better. There's definitely stuff. This is why I kind of want to hammer home. This is not MGS5. It's or 6 or whatever. It is still Death Stranding. You are still picking shit up and going and taking it somewhere else. It's just the conditions under which you do that are a lot more... I don't want to say dynamic because I feel like I say that word all the time. It's lost all meaning. But... it does feel like there's a lot more variety in your objectives in terms of, like, just the conditions that you can deliver under. There is still stuff where you might have to go to an area and destroy stuff, like, as an example. But, yeah, like, it is still Death Stranding, and I cannot kind of hammer that home enough, so.
Cool. In the same post, Elton also asked, how did the game feel performance-wise? Did you play on PS5 or PS5 Pro?
I don't know. I mean, this wasn't like specified. I don't know. Yes, I played on a PS5. I don't think it was not a pro. It looked like a PS5. I don't know if it's like a dev kit or whatever, but it seemed to be a PS5. So yeah, there was options for performance mode or, what's the other one? Quality mode. And both were fine. I played on quality mode for a while, and then I was like, I'm going to try performance. And performance is just, I don't know, the vibe is like so much stronger with this game.
So there was no middle ground mode, which is, that's fairly commonplace with PlayStation these days.
Is it, though? Like, I mean, I mean, it's early days, right? Like, I feel like that shit always kind of comes towards the end. So I wouldn't be surprised to see a middle ground mode, but especially with it's a Decima game, right? And they had 40 FPS modes and such. Although maybe they're PS5 Pro exclusives, I don't know. I was saying before, there was a spectacular set, like boss battle, like it just looks amazing on the base hardware. Like I can't imagine how crisp and amazing that would look on the Pro. So
that's why you bought a Pro.
It is. It's like that is exactly why I bought a Pro. It's like the only reason. So like I'm glad that I'll get to play it.
At Irritate33, which must have been a Twitter user, I assume.
Looking forward to this.
Is the story going to be as confusing as in the first game? And now that's relative. That's a relative question. Because, it's in the eye of the beholder, isn't it?
I think, like... I don't think Kojima's stories are confusing as much as they're like batshit. Like, I think they're just like, so the ways he gets across his ideas are just so
slightly abstract.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, but
it's like the last couple of seasons are Lost. It's like, what's happening here? But I get it.
Yeah, like, and I feel like even So to answer the question, I think that this story, I don't find this confusing. I think if you understand the main, like, how this world works, what a beach is, and what chiral crystals are, which you should know if you've played the first game and you weren't doom scrolling during the cutscenes, I think you will be fine. That's actually one thing I will say. There is a new thing in this game called the, I think it's called the Corpus, which is basically the Codex. And that is very snappy in the way that it explains concepts to you very quickly. If somebody mentions a proper noun in one of the conversations during a cutscene, pops up in the corner of the screen, you can just hold X, I think, and it will pop up with a little dialogue box that says what they're talking about.
That's cool.
Like, Fragile mentions, like, I think, some kind of sickness that you have from jumping to the beach too much, and it's got a name, like jump sickness or something like that. And I was like, what the fuck is jump sickness? And then it just, like, pops up. Yeah, no, it was something like, yeah, or jump shock or something like that.
Yeah.
And I was like, I've never heard this before. What is that? And it just popped up, and I just hold X, and it's like, oh, yeah, cool. And then I can get back straight into it, right?
That is a cool feature.
It's also interesting. I guess maybe he does think people find it confusing, because at any point when you pause a cutscene, it usually is continue or skip. Now it's like continue, skip, or code corpus. So you can open the codex at any point to have a read if you are feeling lost. So
I take from that irritate, if you were confused by the first game, you probably will still be confused by this one.
Yeah, but obviously
there is a means to streamline that and learn a thing or two.
I encourage you to engage with the content and
I encourage you.
I don't know. I just feel like this is, I know it is like kind of stupid, but like it's also so incredible at the same time. Like I love it so much. So I think, and it, right. To me, it makes sense. The internal the logic is a little bit out there, but like it all still makes sense. So. Yeah.
Sam Hannigan asks, not specifically about the game, but how was meeting Kojima for James? He did go on to talk about how he knows you're such a fan because he listens to the content and stuff, but
wow.
I kept it short. He's, yeah.
Good. He's very, he's very quiet. And I think shy, maybe, but I don't know. So, we had most face on time with him in the group interview. And that's where he definitely went off on a few tangents, which like I really loved, because like he'll just randomly start talking about a movie that he loves and he saw, and that's why he did this in this thing. So, it's cool. Wasn't like, what's the word? I feel like I've met like a few famous people now and I kind of get a bit weird and like breathe a lot and like get scared, because it's just like so weird to have like a famous person in front of you. I didn't feel that with Kojima as much. I think like, I don't know.
Felt like you're on his level.
This sounds like really like
Kojima
wankery.
Was nervous meeting James.
Yeah,
yeah,
no,
that's
no,
right.
Not at all.
I can't believe he asked for a photo with you.
Yeah, absolutely. And everyone else at the same time.
Yeah.
He
just didn't want to make them feel bad. That's all.
I just think, he doesn't know this because obviously we didn't have a chat, but I just think I understand everything he said. Like when he was talking about connecting in the game and the connections that you make with the people at the event and stuff, I just completely got it. Like I just feel like I don't say I'm on the same level, but I just understand where he's coming. Creatively, I just completely understand where he's coming from.
Yeah, having played his previous games and the way he tells story and stuff, like when you
listen
to his analogies
and
where he gets his ideas from it. Yeah.
And I'm not saying that in like a pompous dickhead, like looking down on other people.
Yeah, you understand the way that he like conveys ideas. And
just get it. Like I understand what he's doing, and I love that. And I just think there's not a lot of creators that are like that. For me, in games. So,
Luke Moulding asks, "What's with that puppet that looks like Alan Wake?"
Oh yeah, Doll Man. So he's obviously one of the new members of.
I love the names.
Doll Man. Yeah.
Doll Man. So he's.
Yeah.
Hang on. What does that mean? I better press X.
So Doll Man. Yeah. Doll Man is. He essentially is the. What's the head from God of War called? The one that like is
Mimir.
On. Yes. So he's basically this in that game, from a story perspective. He's kind of there to kind of chat to you. Although he doesn't chat heaps. I should probably mention that. He does not. It's nothing like Aloy speaking to herself or even Amid speaking to you or whatever. So it feels like quite reasonable. He's just kind of there to like comment on things a little bit. Sam never talks back to him, so I don't know if that's like if that's doesn't care for him. Yeah, like
he keeps fine. Talking anyway though.
Well, Fragile's like, take him with you, and Sam does not want to. Sam does not want a bar of him, but like still does it. But
is there an in-world reason why he's all stop motiony and obviously a doll?
There is.
Okay.
Yeah,
I can't wait to see that explained.
You can read that in the corpus, they'll tell you as well. He also has a gameplay purpose, so you can actually throw him into the air if you want, and he can basically scout out.
He's like the fucking eagle in Assassin's Creed
system. Yeah, he's the eagle.
Yeah, you can
throw
also
him in the
throw
air. He pops a parachute out, and you can start looking around.
Once again, I don't do that. I kind of just YOLO it and just run in and work out what I'm doing on the fly. Doesn't work out for me all the time, but yeah, so you can do that with him. You can also throw him at people, and it's like a kind of temporary stun as well. So he has a gameplay purpose and a story purpose. He's just one of the many members of Drawbridge who have this like interesting backstory, and it kind of just gives you more, I guess, color to the world and how the beach works and such. So yeah, I think I'm usually a little bit like, I roll my eyes at these kind of like funny kind of side characters or sidekicks, but he's not done. Like, once again, I completely get what Kojima is doing here. Like, and I didn't mind him being around. So
I just remembered something that I wanted to ask. So this is Brody Gibbons writing in. Did you get to play with the photo mode at all? Because that always struck me as very interesting in the stuff we saw of it.
I am not a photo mode enjoyer.
Rude.
No, it's not rude. It's more out of a...
You value your time.
I'm usually previewing or reviewing something or three things, and I need to kind of get through the game. So I don't have time to kind of just sit around and take photos.
No time to enjoy it.
No, that's not true. thank you very much. Nah, but there is a photo mode. I did like one just to see what it was like. Obviously, it's just like every other photo mode. But this, I think this, the vibe of this game, right? Like the skyboxes are beautiful. The vistas are just amazing. So I think people will do some really cool shit with the photo mode. Yeah.
Lovely. These next couple we've sort of answered, but Will Hewitt asked, will the open world be more dynamic or reactive? I think we've established that as both.
Very much so.
Yeah. Judd Johnson has asked, have they expanded much on the road building mechanics? Well,
he's
I think
we
established on that too. Monorails?
I guess roads, I probably should clarify, roads are still the same. You dump materials into them, they build themselves. It's the same thing. I guess the difference is, right, there's still monorails now as well, which are another thing.
Yeah.
One thing I will quickly say is there are mines now, so you can basically come across a mine and dump chiral crystals into that. And then the mine will basically spit out, say, ceramics or resin or whatever you like, whatever the mine is built for. So that's kind of a good way to kind of quickly get some shit to build a road. But obviously, there is an environmentalist message there where you can't really use the mines too much because what will happen? Like, and then, you know, blah, 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 blah. So, yeah.
Cool. Dwayne Richardson asks, is Low Roar's final album, House in the Woods, featured in this game? It better be, or I'm going to riot. Now, I know you're not allowed to talk about licensed music, but I just wanted to chuck this in there because Low Roar fucking rule. So good for Low Roar.
I will deflect from that and basically say Kojima really believes in the music that he kind of curated for this game. We can't talk about what music is in it. But he acknowledges, he said this in the interview, he acknowledges that music is a huge part of it. And he feels that he does a really good job of like honoring the past while like kind of getting an artist that could top Low Roar. And I don't think it's bad to say, like, obviously we know Woodkid is involved with the soundtrack, right? Like, he's a French artist who has a great song in the trailer. So, yeah, I Can't really say much beyond just play it and you'll see.
I don't think we've actually spoken about this, but are you going to the Sydney Opera Show?
I was actually going to ask you, like, what the goal was. Like, are you going? Because we should tee that up. Because I think after playing this, it's like frustrating. I don't think I can just say what the music is. I will say the music is very good, and I feel like they have done a really good job of kind of finding other artists that fit the vibe.
I've already got my tickets, got my accommodation, so if you want to top and tail, we can do that. Come across.
We'll see how we go. Well, yeah.
Fair enough.
I think it'll be good. I think I might actually consider that now. So, yeah, it's exciting.
Carlos Linares, apologies if I'm mispronouncing that, asks, is it going to be an Australia Post delivery simulator again? And it turns out, more than you know. More than you
Quite
know.
Literally.
Yeah.
I think, I think I treated my cargo with more respect than Australia Post, personally.
You didn't lose it for one.
Yeah, and like I also like delivered it to the door of the settlement.
The right house.
I didn't just leave a card and say I attempted delivery. Yeah.
You knocked, and if they weren't home, then you left the card. You didn't just assume.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
All in all, so fuck Australia Post.
Yeah.
Harry, did you have any last questions or thoughts about Death Stranding 2 on the beach that you sort of want to share? Are you excited about this game, having heard James wax lyrical about it for 50 minutes?
Yeah, I've been excited for it since it was revealed. I love the first game. I'm really, really keen to get into this. I haven't really seen much outside of the first like two trailers, I think. So I might keep it
That's
that
all
way.
There is.
Oh, okay, there you go.
Yeah.
But I might keep it that way because launch is only like a month and a half away, and everything I've heard, I mean, I'm going to check it out anyway. So one other question that I do have though, say that like combat is much more improved and stealth as well. Are the opportunities for it more prevalent in this than the first game? Like, would you say you see more of, I think you called them bandits in this one. Are there more encounters with them, or is it sort of the same cadence as the first game?
So there's bandits now, which are like mules. They serve the same purpose, right? There were like one or two bits where, you kind of, I really don't want to ruin some stuff, but there is, there's different enemy. I'll just say there's different factions of enemies, right? So different types of enemies, beyond BTs. So some of them are so hard to sneak around. You can, like I did it once, but then others, like you just have to kind of fight with them. Like you have to be really good at stealth to be able to like manage it. And they all battle differently, if that makes sense. I guess one other thing, like I didn't speak about here, but I wrote about in my preview, is there's also chiral creatures in the world now. So what they are essentially like bats or like little like swarms of spiders and stuff, and they're like in the world, right? So they're like kind of just living. But if you like go into a valley or something where these bats are flying overhead, they'll swoop you and stuff. If you're running through, they'll swoop you and then they'll take your battery away. They're kind of like little mini BTs in a way, in terms of what they are. They're like otherworldly. I was like sneaking through a jungle at the beginning of the game and accidentally stepped on one of the spiders. And then this giant swarm of them kind of came at me. And that was kind of quite harrowing, more than I thought it would be. Like, it's not like my, like the chickens in Zelda. Like, you just don't expect it. Like, you just like, oh yeah. And then they just all fucking come at you. But to answer your question, you're like, it's stuff like that. Like, when I talk about there's better opportunities for stealth, like even stuff like that, where you're kind of hiding from the world in a way, not just enemies. But there are definitely some cool combat set pieces. But you have so many tools at your disposal, like holo grenades, stealth grenades, blah, 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 like, kind of like create things to hide behind, which were in the first game too. But they're just a lot better realized here.
Cool.
I think that's the thing coming away from it, right? Is like, it's, there are just more options for you as a player. Like, whatever you liked about Death Stranding 1 will be here in Death Stranding 2, but better. So...
Mm. I know I'm definitely excited for the game to come out in about 6 or 7 weeks' time. James, can we just get some closing thoughts from you about the experience overall and I guess where this is shaping up for you in terms of the year now? Because obviously this week, as I suppose you guys, I'm a little confused for time as to where this will be sort of sat, but you probably heard on the podcast last week or this week that Grand Theft Auto has shifted out of the year. So it really throws open, I think, the Game of the Year race a little bit. And I'm not sure if this one is one that you might fancy for that. I know Clair Obscur is very much on my list, but did you come away from 40 hours of this thinking, oh, shit, this could be a contender?
Yeah, so last week on the podcast, we talked about, like, our top three, I think, game. I said there's three games in my top three now, like, and I said I couldn't talk about one of them. So far, unless this shits the bed, like, tremendously, I am really, it's, like, really up there for me. I just completely vibe with the story, the beats, the vibes, all of it. So I think that it's doing really well. And I think for when this game was first announced, I was kind of like, oh, like, Death Stranding 1 was really good. I feel like they really told a story there and that was it.
I hated the subtitle too. On the beach, like, ugh.
On the beach.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, I don't feel that subtitle either. But, yeah. So, but having played this now and seeing where it's going and even just from a mechanical perspective, like, the way it plays, I can totally see the neat why they felt the need to do a sequel. This just feels like more Death Stranding in every way and better. Like, I don't want to be as dramatic to say it's a jump from, say, like, you know, Assassin's Creed 1 to 2. Like, I feel like that was a massive jump, right? Mm. But it does feel like going back to Death Stranding 1 now is a little bit harder compared to Death Stranding 2. So I think they did really well.
I better go back and finish the first one again before the second one comes out. Absolutely. Lovely. All right. Well, with that, let's bring an end to this week's supplementary episode of the Press Start Podcast. Subscribe to us on Listener or the podcast service of your choice. Follow us at PressStartAU and visit the site at PressStart.com.au. Obviously, go there and read James's hands-on preview as well as, again, we're sort of pre-recording this, so we're in the past but slash the future. So I presume there's going to be more content that James is doing beyond the preview, so go read all of it. I don't want to put him under the pump and make him feel like he has to do heaps of content, but nevertheless, go read all of that because I'm sure it is going to be terrific. We've obviously been joined today by James.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at JamesATJAMZ. I'm also on Blue Sky. I just don't know how to quickly tell you where I am on that, so if you just Google it, you'll come find up. Him. If anyone has any questions, like, I'm happy to field them. Like, I genuinely love talking about this game. I'm excited to be able to actually talk about it after having to sit on it for like 1.5 weeks, 2 weeks. So, yeah. Mm.
So if you were too scared to write in and get your questions read out, then just slide into James's DMs wherever you find him and just ask him.
Wherever. I'll take anything.
And also joining us today was Harry, just drinking it in.
Yeah, you can follow me at Harry_Callow on X and I think Blue Sky as well, but same as James, I don't actually know for sure.
Yeah, how do you say it? Like, I'm like brodydg.bsky social or whatever the hell it is.
Yeah, I'm not saying all
it's
that.
It's a straight up mess.
You need to buy a custom one or something.
Actually, I don't even know how that works. But
yeah.
And I've been your host, Brody. You can follow me on most things at brody_dg. Thanks for tuning in. And until next time, happy gaming. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.